Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. People are fleeing Gambia as President Yahya Jammeh declares a state of emergency. In a broadcast statement Tuesday, Mr. Jammeh said the state of emergency would last until the nation's Supreme Court rules on his complaint of alleged voting irregularities in last month's election. Mr. Jammeh is refusing to accept the results of the vote, and this man is afraid of possible violence.
I hope that the president might change his mind and then, hand over the government. And then my fear is that problem might happen. Some people might lose their life. And who knows? I might lose my life.
The West African Regional Bloc ECOWAS has placed its military force on standby. More than 50 people were killed when a Nigerian military jet mistakenly bombed a camp for homeless people Tuesday, aiming for Boko Haram militants. The attack struck RAN, a refugee camp for internally displaced people. The aid group Doctors Without Borders treated many of the wounded. Hughes Robert is the organization's head of emergency programs.
The place has been isolated from the surrounding area for many months. People have been stuck in that place. More than 20,000 people have been there without assistance, and the team were just back there when this Nigerian Army Air Force aircraft bombed the place.
The International Committee of the Red Cross said six of its Nigerian members are among the dead. President Barack Obama is commuting the prison sentence of Bradley, now known as Chelsea, Manning. Manning is the former Army intelligence analyst who leaked classified documents. Manning, who underwent a gender change while in prison, is one of 209 inmates whose sentence is being shortened. This is VOA News. The underwater search for the missing Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 has been suspended. Crews completed their deep-sea search of the Indian Ocean without finding a trace of the airliner. Darren Chester is Australia's transport minister.
It's an extraordinary aviation mystery as it stands today. I am hopeful that we'll have a breakthrough in the future. We need to prepare ourselves for the sad and tragic reality that in this foreseeable future we may not find MH370, but that doesn't rule out future endeavours or future breakthroughs in terms of data or technology that helps us solve this extraordinary puzzle.
239 people were aboard the aircraft. British Prime Minister Theresa May has laid out the objectives of what she hopes will be her nation's clean break with the European Union. The hard Brexit, as it's called, she laid out in a speech Tuesday, will mean that Britain will leave the single EU market and break with the European Court of Justice.
We do not approach these negotiations expecting failure, but anticipating success. Because we are a great global nation with so much to offer Europe and so much to offer the world.
Ms. May said a final plan for a phased Brexit will be put to Parliament for a vote. Leader of the opposition Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, though, has some misgivings.
She has said leave the single market, then at the same time says she wants to have access to the single market. I'm not quite sure how that's going to go down in Europe. I think we have to have a deal that ensures we have access to the market, we have British jobs dependent on that market. That's what we'll be pushing for.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. Chinese President Xi Jinping delivered a broad defense of globalization and free trade Tuesday at a Swiss forum of global economic leaders. Mr. Xi told the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos that nations should remain committed to free trade and investment and reject protectionism. Mr. Xi's address came 3 days before the U.S. inaugurates a new president who campaigned on promises that could lead to tariffs on imports from China and Mexico. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said on Tuesday he would not consider renegotiating the Iran nuclear agreement with the incoming Trump administration. The Trump administration has repeatedly denounced the accord. Speaking at a news conference Tuesday, on the first anniversary of the agreement's signing, Mr. Rouhani said there would be no sense in trying to renegotiate it now. Noor Salman, the wife of Orlando nightclub gunman Omar Mateen, appeared in court Tuesday for the first time since being arrested near San Francisco, California. She did not enter a plea during a brief hearing. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian President Yahya Jammeh declares a state of emergency rather than prepare to step down on Thursday.
Hereby declare a state of public emergency throughout the Islamic Republic of the Gambia as a situation exists which, if it is allowed to continue, may lead to a state of public emergency.
Meanwhile, the Economic Community of West African States says Gambian President-elect Adama Barrow will be sworn in tomorrow, Thursday, come what may. Thousands of Gambians are fleeing their country in fear of possible violence. Nigerian military takes Bring Back Our Girls officials on a guided tour of northeast Nigeria. And Nigeria's government clarifies a mistaken airstrike that killed more than 50 people.
The original story said it was a camp of internally displaced people. But the defense headquarters came out and said, no, it was a civilian community that was accidentally bombed.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, and the United Nations seeks funds for famine prevention amid drought in Somalia. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambian President Yahya Jammeh on Tuesday declared a state of emergency as he continues to cling to power after losing the December 1 presidential election to Adama Barrow. Mr. Barrow, who is currently in neighboring Senegal, is supposed to be inaugurated tomorrow, Thursday. In another development, the Gambian parliament late Tuesday gave President Jammeh the authority to suspend the constitution, thereby allowing him to stay in power. As Seni Marina reports from Dakar, there were also more defections on Tuesday from Mr. Jammeh's cabinet.
Gambia's parliament has given President Jammeh the authority to suspend normal constitutional procedure for the embattled leader to regain control. President Yahya Jammeh has declared a 90-day state of emergency just days before his mandate expired. The move comes just after Nigeria deployed a warship to the small nation. The precise term of state of emergency and its implication for the Thursday's inauguration of President-elect Adama Barrow were not immediately known. Jammeh is refusing to step down despite international pressure and threat by other West African nations of a military intervention.
Hereby declare a state of public emergency throughout the Islamic Republic of the Gambia as a situation exists which, if it is allowed to continue, may lead to a state of public emergency. This declaration is necessitated by 1. The unprecedented and extraordinary amount of foreign interference in the December 1st presidential elections and also in the internal affairs of the Gambia, and the unwarranted hostile atmosphere threatening the sovereignty, peace, security and stability of the country. 2. The absconding of the chairman of the Independent Electoral Commission, a key respondent to the petitions filed at the Supreme Court of the Gambia regarding the erroneous December 1st presidential election results. 3. The inability of the Supreme Court to convene as a result of the non-appearance of the judges to hear the election petitions, mainly influenced by foreign powers and their agents, in an effort to thwart the constitutionally mandated process, as captured in an audio recording of the absconded chairman of the IEC, discussing on how plans have been made to ensure the Supreme Court judges will not sit on time to hear the petition.
Lomi Banjul, majority of whom are members of Jammeh's defeated party, passed a motion calling on ECOWAS to refrain from any action that would disrespect and or destabilize the sovereignty, independence, peace, tranquility, and territorial integrity of the Gambia. Meanwhile, Gambia's health minister Omar Sy has also resigned from Jammeh in protest of Jammeh's refusal to step down. He joined dozen other ministers, including information, youth, Finance, Justice, respectively, who both resigned from Jammeh cabinet. Their resignation does not defy political gravity at a time that President Yahya Jammeh has lost power and his refusal to hand over executive power has put the Gambia in a deep political crisis likely to spark a deadly conflict. For VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Seni M.K. Marina reporting from Dakar, Senegal.
The chairperson of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, who is President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, says come what may, Gambian President-elect Adama Barrow will be sworn in tomorrow, Thursday. Mr. Barrow was flown out of the Gambia to Dakar by ECOWAS for his own safety. Liberia's Information Minister Eugene Nambwe says Yahya Jammeh's imposition of a state of emergency does not change ECOWAS's position that Mr. Barrow will be sworn in soon after President Jammeh's term expire on Thursday. ECOWAS has placed its military on standby in case Jammeh refuses to step down. Nambwe says there will be a transfer of power in the Gambia on Thursday in line with ECOWAS's position and the Gambian constitution.
We have heard that the outgoing president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh, has imposed a state of emergency, but that does not change the position of ECOWAS and the position of the African Union. That is that upon the expiration of his tenure, the president-elect will then take over as president of the Gambia. So there will be a transfer of power from Yahya Jammeh to Adama Barrow on tomorrow once the tenure of Mr. Jammeh has ended.
Minister Nambwe, where is this transfer going to take place? In Senegal or in Banjul?
Well, not necessarily Banjul, but there will be a transfer of power in the Gambia. Mr. Barrow is currently in Senegal, but tomorrow he'll go into the Gambia and there will be a ceremony for him to take over power as the legitimately elected president of the Gambia. So the ceremony will happen in the Gambia.
Why can't ECOWAS accept Yahya Jammeh's request to let the Supreme Court of Gambia hear his petition?
ECOWAS position is very clear that based on the constitution of the Gambia, as was articulated by the chair of the authority of heads of state, President Sirleaf, the position is that following the elections, which is in keeping with the constitution of the Gambia, when President Jammeh lost and Mr. Adama Barrow won, there should be a smooth transfer of power. That will happen tomorrow, where ECOWAS will recognize Adama Barrow as the legitimate president of the Gambia. You know, regarding the issue that he has raised about the Supreme Court, ECOWAS listened to that option. But the court itself is not constituted. You also realize that even the Chief Justice of the Gambia informed the ward that he was not going to accept the petition that was made by President Jammeh for him to issue a stay order, so he recused himself from that. So there is a dilemma because of a court that should have seven members, there's only one Chief Justice who himself has been recused. So the only option for progress and peace in the Gambia is for President Jammeh to peacefully hand over power to the president-elect, Mr. Adama Barrow. And I can assure you that this turnover of power will happen tomorrow, whether Mr. Jammeh accepts that or not. But Adama Barrow will be sworn in tomorrow as the president of the Gambia.
Minister Nambwe, thank you very much. It's always nice to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Eugene Nambwe is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. As the anticipated inauguration date for Gambia's president-elect approaches, aid agencies and the Senegalese government say thousands of people are crossing Gambia's border into Senegal. According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, people are sending thousands of children across the border out of fear. UNHCR spokesperson Helen Cox talks to Ricky Stryak about increased monitoring efforts and more.
We're talking about several thousands of people who have crossed the border between Gambia and Senegal in the past 10 days. They left Gambia as a precautionary measure. Our teams who were there this week and last week talked to people who had arrived. These are many children accompanied by women. And as I said, they are coming as a precautionary measure. Families in the Gambia have decided to put their children in a safe place. There is no mass influx at this point. We're talking about some thousands of people.
And I wanted to ask specifically about unaccompanied children coming over. What are UNHCR and other aid agencies concerned about unaccompanied children, especially in this region where there's already a lot of unaccompanied children due to the Taliban movement in this specific area? Is there any concern about trafficking that some people might take advantage of the situation?
We are seeing families sending some members, a brother, a sister, or one of the parents, to accompany groups of children from their own families. For instance, you know, we talked to this woman who came with 22 members of her family, including 19 children. So they were from their own families, cousins, own children. So most of the children are actually accompanied by adults. At this point, it's not only children. I mean, you also have adults. You know, people who are leaving the country because they feel that they just want to see what's going to happen on the political side. What we are seeing also is host families in Senegal doubling or tripling in size, which of course could cause some problems on the long run in terms of resources.
What right now are the main logistical concerns with these people? Is it a lack of resources?
No, at this point, everything is under control. You know, the humanitarian agency stands ready in case of bigger influxes. We are working very closely with the Senegalese authorities. The authorities are putting together contingency plans in terms of more influxes.
Are you seeing more people come through on the southern border toward Casamance or up on the northern border, or is it evenly spread out?
We've seen more people coming on the south border, mainly in the region of Nincho and Sidiu. You have an official border crossing, which is Seliki, but you also have people who are crossing over from the Gambia to villages or non-official border points.
That was Ellen Cox, spokesperson for UNHCR. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak. Today is Wednesday, January 18th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. The Nigerian government says, contrary to earlier reports, its military did not bomb a camp for homeless people, killing more than 50 people. Femi Adesina, special advisor on media and publicity to President Muhammadu Buhari, says the military struck a civilian camp, a community called Ran, which was mistaken for a Boko Haram camp.
The original story said it was a camp of internally displaced people. But the defense headquarters came out and said, no, it was a civilian community. That community is called RAN, R-A-N-N. So it's that community that was accidentally bombed. And the explanation is that there had been some Boko Haram activities in the vicinity. And in the process of the military wanting to take out the insurgents in what they call an operational mistake, it accidentally bombed that community.
Do we know the exact number of people that were killed, did the military say?
That will be between the Borno State government and the National Emergency Management Agency to give. They are the ones that can give any authoritative figure. So the defense headquarters did not say anything about the number of casualties because it may not know. The most reliable figures will come from the state government and the National Emergency Management Agency.
What is President Buhari saying about this?
A statement has been issued. He said he was saddened, he was pained to hear the news, and that it was very regrettable. So he condoled with the families of the dead. He prayed that the injured will receive succor and also pledged that the federal government will assist the state government in attending to the injured.
Can we say that this was an example of military intelligence gone wrong?
It's not for us to say, because we are civilians.
There was an information over the weekend, Monday or so, that your government had invited some of the Bring Back Our Girls movement individuals to go tour somewhere. Can you share some information? Can you share with us what happened? Did that trip ever happen?
They did visit. Two members of the group flew in an Air Force jet in Soti, Silver Sambisa Forest, so they had the opportunity to see firsthand what the forest looks like and the job the military had done to clear the place and rusticate the Boko Haram from the Sambisa forest. There was a press conference after they came back, in which the Minister of Information spoke, and the convener of the Bring Back Our Girls also spoke. So they had the opportunity to see things firsthand.
Why did the government find a need to take the Bring Back Our Girls movement on a tour?
Well, it's part of our engagement with all stakeholders. The Bring Back Our Girls campaigners are not enemies of government. They are Nigerians. We may not always agree with their styles and procedures, but we recognize that they are a group campaigning for a good cause. It's just a matter of understanding one another properly. And that was why they were invited on that trip, and they went.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. You're speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A member of the Bring Back Our Girls movement in Nigeria says a tour of Northeast Nigeria and the epic center of the war against Boko Haram was overwhelming. On the other hand, Aisha Yesufu says watching the Nigerian military hunt for Boko Haram militants was encouraging. The Nigerian military took members of the group on a guided tour of Northeast Nigeria on Monday to witness firsthand the efforts being made by the military in the search for the abducted Chibok schoolgirls.
For us, it was a learning experience, and going through the whole of that place, realizing that Sambisa wasn't just a small place, it's quite a large place. Going through over it and seeing places that had been bombed, and there were a few communities, and the fact that the communities sort of like look abandoned by the state, basically. They didn't even look as if they were part of the present century or millennium, if I might put it. One could almost see no visible kind of amenities. Things were just there, and it was quite surreal. And we had two of the sorties. We had the daytime, we had the nighttime. And so during the day, there were some places where we actually saw our military camp in certain places. Then we saw a community where there were, you know, a little bit of movement and all that. But overall, at the end of the day, it's just so overwhelming. And during the night, we did fly over Chibok. In a way, it's really sad knowing that, oh, you're seeing a place and you have to see it in such a manner. But at the same time, seeing the Nigeria Air Force, the way they were going about the whole business, it gave somebody a bit of hope, knowing fully that, you know, they seem to have their grip on what was happening.
Even though they are fighting Boko Haram, but the fact that you talk about some abandoned places, did it make you feel that Nigeria may be at war with its own country?
Not necessarily at war, but it filled its people. That's what I could see, that the Nigerian state disappeared. The Nigerian state wasn't there for a whole lot of people. And then when they found maybe probably an alternate government in a terrorist group, they had to go along, and then they turned rogue. As I just said, they're going through all of that. I'm just thinking, the whole money that is being spent on wars now, probably if 1% of that had been spent on development, it might have made a difference. It really was sad.
Aisha, after this guided tour, did that change your mind in terms of the efforts the Nigerian army is making to fight Boko Haram in a positive way?
It's not as if it changed. We always knew that the Nigerian military regime, especially the men and women on the war front, we've always believed in them, we've always campaigned for them. What we knew at that time was the fact that we had seen that they were underarmed and underfunded and under-equipped. But what for us, I would say, that went on is the fact that the kind of professionalism that was displayed by the Nigeria Air Force. And so you could see, yes, the way they were putting their things together, the way they were acting and all that. So there was a sense of professionalism about it.
Aisha Yesufu is a member of the Bring Back Our Girls movement of Nigeria. She was speaking with me from Abuja, Nigeria. The United Nations wants almost $1 billion to prevent famine in Somalia. But as a new government establishes itself, there are worries about corruption and political interference with aid delivery. Jason Pantinkin reports from Mogadishu.
The United Nations warned Tuesday that drought in Somalia may push the country to famine this year. The UN appealed for $864 million to fund relief efforts in the Horn of Africa nation for 2017. In 2011, 250,000 people starved to death amid drought and conflict. Aid was slow to arrive at that time, and when it did arrive, much of it was diverted by armed groups or blocked from areas controlled by Islamic militant group Al-Shabaab. Today, parts of Somalia again face a severe lack of food due to a shortage of rainfall and continued war between the government and Al-Shabaab. The UN estimates that 5 million Somalis, or 40% of the population, need relief, including more than 320,000 children believed to be acutely malnourished. Peter de Klerk, the UN Humanitarian Coordinator for Somalia, says food and water prices are rising and people are crossing to Ethiopia in search of food.
It's clear already that if rapid and adequate action is not taken, we're more and more likely to find ourselves in the same situation as in 2011.
The food crisis comes as Somalia gets a new government. The parliament, inaugurated earlier this month, selects a president next week. The United Nations representative to Somalia, Michael Keating, said avoiding famine will be a major test for the new officials.
In some ways, the legitimacy of the incoming government will in part be viewed by the degree to which it comes to terms with this problem and puts its weight behind solving it.
Parliamentary Speaker Mohamed Osman Jawari said Parliament fully supports the UN's humanitarian response plan for 2017. He said the government established a national drought committee and would launch discussions on the matter in Parliament immediately.
We'll do our best, whatever we can do from our side, we'll do it. It's no time for politicking here. We have to do whatever we can do to save our people.
There are, however, doubts. The European Union representative to Somalia, Veronica Lorenzo, said the government must speak out against corruption. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Mogadishu.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the latest update from the 2017 African Cup of Nations holding in Gabon. Egypt's goalkeeper Essam El Hadary became the oldest player at an African Cup of Nations tournament as he kept a clean sheet in their draw against Mali. Starting from the bench, it appeared El Hadary would have to wait for another day to etch his name in the African Cup of Nations folklore. But after 23 minutes, he replaced injured Ahmed El Shanawi to become the oldest ever player to take part in AFCON at the age of 44 years and 2 days. Egypt, who were returning to the tournament for the first time since winning the 2010 edition in Angola, were favored to get the better of Mali, but the match did not pan out that way. In the other Group D game played on Tuesday, Ghana's Andre Ayew converted from the penalty spot in the 32nd minute to secure a 1-0 win in their Group D opener against Uganda. The West Ham midfielder coolly struck from the penalty spot past Dennis Onyango after Isaac Isende had fouled Asamoah Gyang in the penalty box. The last time both teams met at AFCON was in the finals of the 1978 edition, which Ghana won 2-0. Ghana's coach Avram Grant acknowledged that it has been a long time since Ghana started a tournament with a win in the first game and attributed the win to hard work, determination and focus from the entire team.
I think all the group is very tough. And as I saw now, all the games in Africa, and it will not be easy for any team, like it's happened all over the world. And if I may say, even the qualification, Africa become like Europe. There is no, like before, 5-0, 4-0, even not 3-0. The game become very tight, like all over the world. But our target is to be tough for the other teams.
Asamoah Gyang is Ghana's striker.
Tomorrow, but I think with the quality we have in camp, we are capable of winning. You know, and, that is our portion for this tournament. You know, the more we win, the more we go. So.
And so after the conclusion of the first round of matches, the second round of matches is scheduled to begin today. Gabon host will face Burkina Faso in the first game, while Cameroon will confront Guinea-Bissau. And that's the latest update from the 2017 African Cup of Nations holding in Gabon. I am Samson O'Malley. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotin and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good Thursday. VOA.
On Friday, January the 20th, all eyes will be on Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of the 45th U.S. President, Donald J. Trump. Be a part of history. Join VOA for 2 hours of special live coverage broadcast on radio and television and available on the Internet at voanews.com. Tune in Friday, January 20th, starting at 16 hours Universal Time.